Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins. Episode 4 time of Season 2 of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime Podcast with me, your host, A.P. Fuchs. So, welcome to the show. We're on episode 4, and 4 for me has always been a strange number, like in terms of like, because, you know, from the bookmaking point of view, and the way I look at things in my head, right, with books, is you kind of got like either your single release, right, and that's it's a one-off, or it's like a trilogy. And then so for me, like when I surpass the 3 mark, and I get into like start doing a 4, just the way I kind of feel slash in my head and in sort of on my insides is like I'm like starting a new trilogy. It's kind of a weird feeling. It's kind of messed up, but that's how maybe the creative mind works. I don't know. But yeah, so we kind of did our first quote unquote trilogy for the past 3 episodes, and now we're like in the sequel trilogy, you know. And if I was George Lucas, I'd be doing this episode 4 first, and you'd be hearing this first, and I'd be doing the intro episode 3 episodes down the line. And that'd be really funny. Anyway, thanks for tuning in for today. Appreciate it. And what we got here coming up is a story that is, let's just say, it's mysterious. It's a bit horrific. It's very much psychological. And it's something of a thriller. And more importantly, it's you versus you. And maybe you. You'll see. And then don't forget to tune in to the story behind the story segment right after, because then you'll find out where this story came from and what real life supernatural event triggered it. So close your eyes, listen to a story about something in a rearview mirror. In the rearview mirror. Of course it had to happen. Nothing ever works out when you want it to. The 1999 Black Saturn came to a halt along the shoulder of the Trans-Canada Highway just after 6 p.m. It was Friday night, and Jimmy Griffith was going to be late for his getaway with his friends, Joey, Randall, and Steve. It was snowing, the flakes coming down in clumps, but lightly enough so it didn't pose a rose hazard. Not yet, anyway. It should ease up within the hour, Jimmy assumed, if not sooner. The Saturn was unempty, but it was really impossible to tell with this car. Last year, the fuel gauge began giving him trouble, and its needles stayed at the 3/4 tank mark after trips to the gas station, as if filling it hadn't made a difference. Some months passed, and the needle began to dip, until eventually it sat on E, and it was impossible to tell how much fuel was actually in the car. Jimmy would watch the odometer, remembering on average how many kilometers he got to a full tank. But with work being hectic as of late and trouble at home, he couldn't remember the number of kilometers on the odometer when he filled up last. Now, he was on empty. For real. Now, he was screwed. The sky was already dark with deep gray clouds, evening having set in an hour ago. He put the car in park, turned the key back in the ignition, and popped the trunk. There's a gas can back there, he thought. With a huff, he got out of the car, the fat flakes of cold landing on the tips of his ears and neck. He rounded to the rear of the vehicle and opened the trunk. There was a spare tire, some blankets, beer, and hot dogs for the cabin trip this weekend, chips and some DVDs, but no gas can. Perfect, he said, remembering it was sitting in his garage at home. He had removed the clunky canister to make room for all the junk he was bringing to the cabin. He glanced down and looked at the road. The white blanket of snow drifting down seemed thicker the further down the road he looked, the white flakes defined in clear white blotches in the yellow light of the street lamps of the highway. There were no cars coming. Jimmy went back to the car and sat in the driver's seat, cursing himself for being unprepared. It's okay, he told himself. He wriggled his wrist, the cuff of his shirt sliding back, and checked his watch. It's about 6:10. You don't have to be there until around 8:00. Plenty of time. His head was so busy after a full day at the office looking over insurance policies that he forgot about his cell phone in his glove compartment. He snapped his fingers, remembering, and opened the glove compartment and removed his cell. The battery was down to 1 bar. He pulled out the antenna and dialed up Steve. He knew Steve was going to be leaving at around 6:30. If Steve hadn't left early, and with a little luck, he might be able to catch it before he headed out and get some assistance. He dialed Steve's number, and after 4 rings, the phone cut out. "Oh, come on!" He pressed end and tried again. Same thing. This time there was only 3 rings before being cut off by a click and the line went dead. Jimmy dug in the glove compartment for the cigarette lighter adapter, and once he found it, he plugged it one end into the lighter, the other into the phone. He tried the number again. After 5 rings, Steve picked up. "Hello? Steve, it's Jimmy. Got a little prob—" The phone cut out. "Oh, come on!" Jimmy shook the phone as if it would help. He tried Steve's number again. After only 1 ring, it cut out. Frustrated, he threw the phone against the dashboard. Piece of junk. He crossed his arms, furrowed his brow, and the thought of his options. His thoughts were interrupted when he heard a voice, low and smooth, calm and reassuring, as if it knew something he didn't. The voice came from the back seat. "Hello, Jimmy," it said. "You're in a bit of a rut, aren't you?" "Who's there?" Jimmy spun around, glancing into the back seat. No one was there, nothing except a few McDonald's wrappers and some papers from work. Swallowing the lump in his throat, he turned back around and tried the cell phone again. This time it didn't even ring. The snow started to come down heavier. His heartbeat picked up a bit, worried he wouldn't get to the cabin by 8. A flush of heat came over him, and he got out of the car for some air. He looked up and down the road. There was a pair of headlights off in the distance, a good 2 kilometers away, if not more. He'd wait until the car came by, flag them down, and see if they had a phone so he could call a friend and a tow. Money wasn't an issue, so a tow wouldn't be a problem. He just wanted to get to the cabin, away from the city, away from his job. Just needed a break. He stuck out his tongue and caught a few snowflakes, a habit since he was a kid. The flakes were cool and refreshing. Despite it snowing, it wasn't too cold and he didn't need his gloves. But, given Winnipeg winters, he knew that come 8 or 9 o'clock, the temperature would drop considerably and he'd need a pair of gloves and a toque. He didn't have either. The car down the road drew nearer. Jimmy took a few steps onto the road, ready to start waving his hands. "Let's hope they stop." When the car was about 100 feet away, Jimmy began waving his arms back and forth in an X, high above his head. The car sped past, as if he wasn't there. He suddenly had the taste of smoke in his mouth. He spat, and the taste went away as quickly as it came. "Jerks," he muttered. He checked up and down the road again. No one was coming. The snow was falling even thicker, and the wind was picking up. "Just my luck, this will turn into a storm." He went back to the car. Sitting down, he tried the ignition again, hoping that by some miracle the car had been mistaken it was out of gas and would start. Of course, it didn't, and Jimmy put his head against the wheel. He had a slight headache. He always spoke aloud when things got rough and he was alone. It was actually more of a mix of thoughts drifting into speech, then drifting into thoughts again, then drifting into speech. "Okay," he said. "Just think of your options. You're on the side of the road, alone, phone doesn't work, no gas in the trunk." He checked his watch. It was 6:23. "Steve's left by now. If he takes this route, I can wait and hope he passes by and sees me. Then again, with the snow, he might not know it's me. Crap. Jimmy." The voice. It was back. "I'm not hearing this," he said. "But I'm here, Jimmy. Where else would I be? I'm always here with you." He knew who was speaking to him. Jamie. He'd known Jamie since he was a kid. Jamie first came to him when he was 7 years old, one day in the playground at school. A kid had pushed Jimmy over the edge of the sandbox, and he'd hit his head on the box's edge. "It's okay, Jimmy. I'm here," Jamie had said that day long ago. Jimmy first thought it was another kid trying to help him. When he looked around, he saw he was alone in the playground, the bell to go back inside, having run some time before. Jamie never came back after that day. Not until Jimmy was 14 and was trying to pot for the first time. Jimmy didn't know if it was the lightheadedness from the weed or the feeling of detachment from the world that triggered it, but Jamie returned, this time older, 14, like Jimmy. Then Jamie left and didn't return until Jimmy was 21, while on a trip to Europe, backpacking on his own. It was 7 years between visits. Perhaps because Jimmy had been 7 years old when Jamie first came to him inside his head. Here, in the car, Jamie was back. Jimmy was 28. "I see you," Jamie said. "Go away, Jamie," Jamie said. "You're not real. You're not here." "But I am. I've been here a while, Jimmy. How is your smoke?" Jimmy furrowed his brow. "Smoke?" A flashback to standing at the side of the road and the taste of cigarette smoke that suddenly filled his mouth. Jamie. Jamie had been smoking. Jimmy didn't remember doing it. Feeling his pockets, he pulled out a pack of Player's Lights. "Where'd you get these?" Jimmy asked. He didn't smoke, but Jamie did. "Lunch hour, when you ran to Second Cup for a coffee. Don't you recall stopping at the drugstore along the way?" Jamie chuckled. Swallowing, Jimmy glanced again to the back seat. Jamie was back there. He just couldn't see him. He paused, then, "Why are you behind me?" "What do you mean?" "You're always behind me. On the playground, while I was lying down, your voice seemed to come from behind me, behind my head. Smoking dope in Joey's garage, I was sitting on a lawn chair. You spoke to me from behind, near Joey's dad's truck. You're in the back seat of my car. Well, maybe you're always just one step ahead of me. Get it?" The windshield of the car was covered in white, the snow coming down in sheets. Jimmy's breath faintly fogged when he exhaled. The inside of the car was cooling down. Putting Jamie out of his mind, Jimmy got out of the car and slammed the door behind him. The snowflakes licked the tips of his ears, refreshing, like before. Much needed. Not long after, it really began to come down. No cars, just snow, falling heavily. He stuffed his hands in his pockets and felt the cigarette package. He didn't recall replacing the pack in his pocket. "Creepy," he muttered and tossed the pack on the road. He got back in the car. "Cold out?" "A little. Where are you?" "Look up." He glanced in the rearview mirror, and there, sitting in the back seat, was Jamie. Jimmy spun in his seat. Jamie wasn't there, but he was in the mirror when Jimmy looked again. "You should be gone by now," Jimmy said. "Maybe, maybe not. I've never really gone anywhere, Jimbo. I was there with you today at Second Cup, there with you when you popped into the drugstore for some cigarettes. When I popped in for some cigarettes." In the rearview mirror, Jamie smiled at him. His teeth were white against a tanned face, like he spent most of his days under a Florida sun. Jimmy didn't have a tanned face. Jamie's hair was dark like Jimmy's, but instead of combed from left to right, Jamie's was parted in the middle. He wore the same clothes as Jimmy. Blue jeans, a red sweatshirt, and a navy blue parka. Getting cold, Jimmy rubbed his hands together with thin blue on them. "What do you want?" "Remember Joey's girlfriend back when you were 14? Jimmy didn't. "Her name was Sarah Daly. Beautiful girl. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Your regular Barbie doll. Even at her age, she had curves that was slight even some of the Playboy bunnies. Anyway, that dope you smoked? She was smoking it too. It loosened you guys up. Or were you so high you don't remember?" Jimmy didn't remember. He wished he could, wished he knew what Jamie was talking about. "Regardless, you two got friendly behind Joey's dad's truck when Joey went into the house to use the bathroom. He got sick off the dope and was in there for a while. He even said so and said he was going to throw up. He was new to it, but Sarah. Now that was a fine girl. I loved her. When you guys hung out at school, you, Joey, and Sarah, I watched her as she moved, as she smiled, reveled in the way she sounded when she talked and how she sometimes squinted her left eye when making a point about something she was saying. Kissing her behind the truck was like kissing your girl at the same time. Same girl as Pam. But Sarah's lips were softer, more delicate, like kissing a flower, yet damp as though with dew. I poured myself into her. No, that didn't happen, Jimmy said. He put his head against the steering wheel again. Suddenly, he slammed his palms into the wheel, then with a thwack, and sat up straight in his seat, glaring into the rearview mirror. Jamie only looked back at him, calm. She and I never got together again after that. Joey came back into the garage, healthier, but still sick. Every time I tried talking to Sarah, she always shrugged me off. She would say, "Jimmy, you're different." She was talking about me when she said that, of course, but how was she to know that you and I shared the same body? "You only come every 7 years," Jimmy said. 7 years. 7 years old, 14, 21, and now. Same date, too. March 23rd. I can't believe I forgot about today. Wasn't thinking. Too much on my mind. My mind, you mean. Ours? Doesn't matter. Back to Sarah. Do you remember me taking her out back behind the school, leading her by the hand, promising her that Joey was there and that he had a big surprise for her? Jimmy put his face in his hands. He didn't want to hear what Jamie was going to say next, but couldn't help but listen. Behind the dumpster, I took her and made her stand against the wall. I tried to explain to her all that I felt and how it drove me crazy to see her with Joey. She didn't understand. I said my name was Jamie. She said, "No, my name is Jimmy." I told her again my name was Jamie, and she got scared and wanted to get out from behind the dumpster. I wouldn't let her. Couldn't. I pushed her up against the wall, tried to kiss her. She scratched my face. Your face. Jimmy touched his right cheek. That's where those faint scars had come from. Sarah. I hit her. Then I hit her again, and again, and again. She slumped against the wall, crying, begging me to stop. I didn't. I couldn't. I don't know why, but it felt so good to hit her. Felt so good to come out of you and release all the emotions that you suppress when you keep me down. She tried to crawl away. I picked her up by the shoulders and slammed her into the wall, her head bouncing off the bricks with a dull thud. There was a small spot of red on the brick. Blood. Hers. I pushed her into the wall again, her head bouncing the same way. That dull thud was soothing. Then the snow came down, Jimmy finished. Yes, you remember. I wasn't there when they found her body. I was home by then. Joey was devastated. He's never been the same since. Even to this day, he still talks about her, but never mentions her by name. But we all know who he means when he does. You killed her. You killed Sarah. Jimmy turned into an empty back seat that glanced back into the rearview mirror. Jamie grinned at him. Jimmy bolted out of the car and ran as far ahead of it as he could until he was winded and had to stop to put his head between his legs. He could barely make out the car's black blur between the heavily falling snow. The wind bit at his skin. He spat on the ground, strangely captivated by the pale yellow glob of phlegm against a dull quilt of white. He took a deep breath, icy and sharp. A car door slammed. Jimmy glanced up, hands still on his knees. Behind the sheet of snow was a silhouette of a man coming toward him. Jamie. Jimmy's heart sped up. So did Jamie's pace as he moved toward him. He stood, ready to fight. Appearing out of the rain of thick snowflakes, Jamie charged him and tackled him to the ground. Helpless on his back, Jimmy took it to Jamie, as Jamie delivered blow after blow to his chin, to their chin. You're only hurting yourself, Jimmy told him. No, Jamie said, you're hurting yourself. It didn't make sense. None of it did. Jimmy swung out, but when his fist struck Jamie, it was no different than striking air. It was as if Jamie wasn't there. But you're not there, are you? He said quietly. Of course I'm here, Jimbo. Always have been. I've been here all along. You killed Sarah. It was you, Jimmy said. Jamie struck him hard in the throat, causing him to sputter. Snow got in his eyes. "No," Jamie said. "You killed Sarah, Jimmy. It was all of you. All of it. I'm just an echo of what you truly want. Truly are. Think about it." Jamie stopped hitting him. "Think about it, Jimbo. Think about the black dot." Jimmy coughed. The black dot? "Yes, the black dot. Think harder." The black dot. Jimmy knew what it was. It was that dark place he had stuffed all his anger, all his fear, all his shameful thoughts into. He always envisioned it as a black dot, a dark circle, a deep void that held all the negative things he controlled himself not to think or do. It was the black dot that created Jamie, a shadow version of himself, the most shameful part of him. He thought back to Sarah and that day behind the dumpster. Though he wasn't in control of his actions, he remembered seeing everything as though looking through the bottom of a beer bottle, a dark lens. The black dot. He should have had control. He should have stopped Jamie. He could have, but didn't. Tears ran down his cheeks. "Oh, stop your crying." Jamie's weight on top of his chest was crushing. The snow surrounding his ears and cheeks turned bitingly cold. He had to get up or he'd get frostbite. Get off, he told Jamie. No. Please. No. Please, get off me. No. Jamie! There had to be a way to get Jamie off him. He certainly couldn't push him off. Every time he hit him, it was like hitting air. Touching Jamie was impossible. But knowing that wasn't enough. There had to be a way. Jamie must have a weakness. Jamie struck Jimmy on the chin again. Stop it! Jimmy shot and tried to push Jamie off him instinctively. His hands passed through Jamie just as easily as they passed through the snow that was coming down. I wonder if Jamie shares my thoughts, Jimmy wondered. Can he hear me? Can you? He waited for a response, waited for Jamie to mock him and say how he can hear everything that he was thinking. But no response came. Either Jamie was playing with him, letting him find hope and keeping his thoughts separate, or Jamie really couldn't hear his thoughts. Either way, it was a chance he had to take to get out of this. Freezing, the snow around his ears and cheeks having numbed the skin, Jimmy thought back of the black dot. Then it all became clear. Jamie was the black dot. Jimmy closed his eyes and pictured it in his mind, setting the black dot on a mat of deep green, his favorite color. He could see the circle's edges, see its shaded in center, a complete and utter void of darkness. Jamie struck him again, this time so hard his head bounced against the snow. Jimmy blocked out the pain, but could still taste the blood on his tongue. He focused on the black dot, the image clear in his mind. He forced the green upon it, washing over it like waves over sand, washing it, rinsing it, covering it. The black dot began fading into the green as if sinking into a pool of quicksand. It tried to surface again, tries to ride out of the green liquid, but Jimmy submerged it. Soon, the black dot was gone, and only the green remained. Jimmy opened his eyes. Jamie was gone. He was panting, his heart racing. For a moment, the black dot tried to surface again. He pushed it away once more and covered it with green. Legs rubbery, he stood and brushed the snow off his chest and legs, his fingers quickly freezing. Ambling over to the car, he covered his ears with his hands, warming them. It might have been his imagination, but the falling snow seemed to be thinning. Is it because Jamie's gone? He wondered. He didn't want to dwell on it too much, just in case Jamie returned at the thought of his name. Jimmy got back into the car. He rubbed his hands together, blew on them, then rubbed them together again. The keys dangled in the ignition. I wonder... He turned the key and the engine started. Jimmy couldn't help but laugh with joy when he heard the engine purr. Don't want to risk it, he said. Better get to the next gas station before I run out for real. I wonder if Jamie made me think the car wouldn't start. Then another voice, his own voice, rose in protest. Stop it, you idiot. Don't think about him or he might come back. Then, sorry, I'll stop thinking about him. Good, he agreed with himself. He took another deep breath, thankful that the whole ordeal was over. He rolled down the window, clearing it of snow, and checked the road behind him. The road was empty. He swished the windshield wipers, pushing off the snow. The black dot danced before his vision. The snow came down thick. As he glanced in the rearview mirror, he saw Jamie grinning at him. "You killed her, Jimbo. It was all you."Well, thanks for tuning in and listening to that little tale, or a longer tale, as we're doing now in season two. But, here's the story behind the story. It was very basic, like, in terms of, from what I recall anyway, when I wrote it, was it just started off with the seed of an idea, and the rearview mirror was actually that seed. Nothing to do with, as you heard, Jimmy and Jamie having this sort of this dual personality, body thing sharing stuff going on. The idea with the rearview mirror, I came up with the title first, is because my dad, I can't remember how old I was probably maybe 12 to 13 to 14, somewhere in there, and we were talking like spiritual matters, and the subject of ghosts came up, right? And we discussed what those ghosts are as from a Christian world perspective. And anyway, my dad told me this story. He said, you know, when he was young, he was probably around 17, 18 at the time, and he had lost his grandmother. She had passed, and he'd really missed her. And he ended up, one night, he was driving, and he happened to drive past the cemetery where his grandmother was buried. And it was, again, this was a loss that he was struggling with. Just in terms of just, you know, saying goodbye and grieving. And so he was driving past the cemetery, and he looked in his rearview mirror, and he saw his grandma. And then when he looked in the back seat, of course, freaked out, she wasn't there. And then he looked back in the rearview mirror, and she wasn't there either. But then after that moment, after that event, and he proceeded with his night, inside his, you know, in his head and his heart, he was able to let her go, you know. So what that experience was, you know, was that in his head, and that was just a massive way of sort of projecting the grieving process, I don't know. Or, you know, was it indeed a ghost encounter? I mean, it remains to be seen, right? So, but the point is, that was the seed of the idea, and now it's the story behind this particular story, was the idea of something existing in the rearview mirror, but something that's intangible, something that you can't conquer. It's something that you can't fight your way out of, physically speaking. You know, you can't punch it, you can't touch it, you can't, and even when you speak to it, you're still speaking to like nothing, right? So that's what gives it the horror element, and that's the part that I brought into it, was that part of it, was this idea of encountering a quote-unquote enemy that you can't touch, you can't deal with, you can't physically subdue. And I wanted to expand on that, and I ended up turning into a bit of a mind game type of idea. And in the end, you know, I was pleased with the way it turned out. I can't remember 100% where it was published originally, or if I kept it to myself. I'd have to check my archives to see what's going on with that, but it's kind of irrelevant now. It's in the Magic Man collection. That's what matters, right? But anyway, yeah, so that's the story behind the story. Very that simple. It was a story my dad told me, a family story. So I take those stories, like any family story told to me, you know, regardless of genre it might fall in. Every family story to me is special. And so I took this particular one, which was like a family horror story, and blossomed into a story for you to enjoy, both to read and to listen to. So I hope that was the case today. I hope you enjoyed the tale. And next week, we're going to do some more stories, and we're going to come at you with a superhero one. So until then, thanks for tuning in for the story behind the story. And yeah, I wonder what happened. Do you have any bizarre like encounters like that, where you see something for like a glance and then suddenly it's gone? If so, leave it in the comments. I'd love to hear about it. All right, cheers. Thanks for sticking around till after the credits. Welcome here. And I just wanted, this is going to be my little segment here. It's going to be very brief, as they always are. And this is going to be a little behind the scenes tidbit for you. So, like, when I'm doing these story episodes for you, it's enjoyable, it's fun to read and all the rest, but my mouth gets dry, right? So you'll notice, like, if you're watching the YouTube version, you'll notice me reach for the glass of water. You might even hear the sound when the cup goes down. And or if you're listening to it on audio, like on YouTube Music or Spotify or whatever, and you hear a pause and you hear a that's me taking a sip of water and putting the cup down on a wooden desk because that's all I got to work with right now. So anyway, that's behind the scenes. It's kind of weird because these longer stories, as opposed to the flash fiction, just make your mouth drier. So that's kind of the struggle that we're dealing with this season is dry mouths. So anyway, that's your behind the scenes tidbit for this episode. And come back for episode 5. Why? Because it's going to be a super one. Cheers.